You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Feeling stuck in your job? Bank of America's The Academy for Consumer and Small Business helps you develop a long-term career path. Through peer mentorship, immersive programs, and a variety of clear and distinct paths, you can reach the next level in your career. Take your first step towards a long-term career path at careers.bankofamerica.com. And now, on with the show. Hi, I'm Ben Mathis. Welcome to Kick-Ass News. Season 2 of AMC's hit series The Terror returns tonight, August 12th at 10/9 Central. Set during World War II, the haunting and suspenseful second season of AMC's horror-infused anthology series centers on a series of bizarre deaths that haunt a Japanese-American community. But it also confronts the real shadows in our history as it shines a light on the often overlooked story of Japanese-American internment and asks what it truly means to be an American. From 1942 to 1945, more than 145,000 Japanese-Americans and Japanese-Canadians were forced from their homes and into internment camps by their respective governments, simply because of where they or their ancestors were born. One of those Japanese-Americans was a very young George Takei. He's now returning to this formative experience in his life as a historical consultant and star in The Terror Infamy. And today, he joins me on the podcast to talk about the painful experience of having his whole family's life uprooted by their own government, the eerie sense of déjà vu he got when he first arrived on the set of The Terror, and how he felt like a link to the past for the other actors portraying the very things that he lived through as a child. He recalls being forced to live out of a horse stall at a California racetrack for 2 months, and then shipped across the country to an internment camp in the swamps of Arkansas. But he says for an innocent boy, oblivious to discrimination and injustice, it all just seemed like a great adventure. George explains why he takes issue with the term Japanese internment camps, why his parents were nearly deported over a citizenship questionnaire, and why he fears that history might be repeating itself under President Donald Trump. Plus, how an early experience in the camps partly inspired him to go into acting, and of course, we'll talk a little Star Trek. Coming up with George Takei in just a moment. Legendary actor, author, producer, and activist George Takei is best known for his role as Mr. Sulu on Star Trek, but what many people might not know is that he spent much of his childhood in an internment camp for Japanese Americans during World War II. This formative moment in his life inspired him to publish a new graphic novel about his experience titled They Called Us Enemy, and now he stars in and serves as a consultant on AMC's second season of The Terror, which is set in an internment camp very much like the one he experienced as a boy. The Terror, Infamy premieres August 12th on AMC. George Takei, thanks for joining me.
Good to be talking with you.
Well, The Terror Infamy is a horror series, of course, but it is set against the very real backdrop of historical events. And your role as a consultant on this show isn't just a vanity thing. There are scenes that are straight out of your own childhood. You actually lived this, right?
That's correct. When I was 5 years old, as a matter of fact, it was just a few weeks after my fifth birthday that my parents got me up very early one morning together with my brother, a year younger, and my baby sister. They dressed us hurriedly, and my brother and I were told to wait in the living room. And so there we were, just gazing out the front window, when suddenly we saw two soldiers marching up our driveway, carrying rifles with shiny bayonets on them. They stomped up the front porch and with their fists began pounding on the door.
Wow.
It was terrifying. The vibration seemed to shake the whole house the way I remember it. And my father came out of the bedroom where they were doing some last-minute packing, answered the door, and literally at gunpoint, we were ordered out of our home. My father gave my brother and me small packages to carry, and he hefted two heavy suitcases, and we followed him out and stood on the driveway waiting for my mother to come out. And when she came out, she had our baby sister in one arm, a huge duffel bag in the other, and tears were streaming down her cheek.
And one of your experiences that does make it into the show is after that, I guess Japanese Americans in LA were rounded up and moved to this temporary facility. Where did they have you living?
They took us from a two-bedroom house on Garnet Street in Los Angeles to the stable area of the Santa Anita racetrack,
gosh,
where the horses were kept. The horses had been moved out, and each family was assigned one horse stall, still pungent with the stink of horse manure.
Oh my God, that's terrible.
For my parents, so going from a two-bedroom house on Garnet Street in Los Angeles to this horse stall was a degrading, humiliating, painful moment. But for me, as a five-year-old kid, I thought it was fun to sleep where the horses sleep. I could smell the horses.
Yeah.
And so in my book, they called us enemy. I tell two parallel stories. The adventure for this five-year-old kid from Los Angeles, and running parallel to that was my parents' horrifying, harrowing experience. We were innocent American citizens.
Yeah.
My mother was born in Sacramento, California. My father was a San Franciscan. We were born in Los Angeles. We had absolutely nothing to do with Pearl Harbor. But with no charges, no trial, due process, the central pillar of our justice system, simply disappeared.
Wow.
And soldiers came and rounded us up, and we were temporarily there at Santa Anita. Ultimately, we were taken to a barbed wire concentration camp in the swamps of Arkansas. Barbed wire fence, sentry towers, guns aimed at us. Searchlights followed me when I made the night runs to the latrine. It was the definition of a concentration camp. But to five-year-old me, I thought it was nice that they lit the way for me to pee. So these two contrasting parallel experiences.
Yeah, there is this strange innocence to many of your childhood recollections of the camps. And it actually reminds me a lot of, I don't know if you remember this movie, the Italian movie Life is Beautiful Benigni. And he's this father who gets sent to the concentration camps. And in order to shield his child from the horrors of the camps, he sort of makes a game out of it and plays make-believe with him. How did your dad frame this experience for you as just a 5 or 6 year old boy at the time?
He told us that we were on a long vacation in this place called Arkansas. And to me, Arkansas sounded exotic. It could have been Honolulu, which is a funny sound.
Yeah.
You know? And it was different. I mean, there is the bayou right there, right outside the barbed wire fence, and some of that bayou was within the barbed wire fence. Trees grew out of water, and their roots snaked in and out. You could see the roots going in the water and then coming right back out and going back into the water. It was an exotic, fantastical place.
But you were pretty much in a swamp, right?
We were in the swamps. And when it rained, the camp itself, which had been drained of the swamp, but when it rained, it turned into a swamp, the muck. And, you know, we had to make the trip to the mess hall three times a day and God knows how often to the latrine. Mm-hmm. And older people could not make that trek from their barrack to the mess hall. Their feet would sink into the muck, and they couldn't pull it out. So young men had to carry them on their backs and deliver them to the mess hall. But my father was elected block manager, the liaison between the camp command. Mm-hmm. And he organized young men, and they got scrap lumber left over from the construction of the camp itself, and built narrow boardwalks connecting all 10 barracks to the mess hall.
Yeah, he was kind of a leader within the community there.
He was.
Yeah.
And also, you know, something of a advisor giving guidance. And he said, you know, all these people were stressed out. Marriages were stressed.
Yeah.
And he had to serve as marriage counselors. Where some people, you know, became suicidal, depressed. And so he had to wear many, many different hats.
Now, before we get too far into this, I want to point out that you take issue with this common use of the term Japanese internment camps.
Absolutely.
What does that phrase get wrong?
Plain, simple English grammar tells you that Japanese internment camps would be run by the government of Japan. We were American citizens of Japanese ancestry, incarcerated by the order of the President of the United States in the United States, in our case, Arkansas, and guarded over by the U.S. military. They were American concentration camps.
And let's be honest, Arkansas is barely part of the United States.
They were all in the parts that were barely part of the United States, in the most desolate places.
Yeah.
The windswept high plains of Wyoming, Idaho, Utah, Colorado, the blistering hot desert of Arizona.
Yeah.
Can you imagine being in a black tar paper barrack in the blistering, I mean, oppressive heat of Arizona?
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more with George Takei when we come back in just a minute. Today's episode is brought to you by Kronos. Kronos knows that for many organizations, maintaining a modern workforce of hourly, full, or part-time workers can be a challenge. This is especially true for human resources professionals working hard to attract and retain all the best talent. That's why Kronos puts HR, payroll, talent, and timekeeping on a single cloud-based platform. It's one specially designed to give HR professionals supporting a blended workforce a whole new level of confidence. With Kronos, they have everything they need to tackle nearly any human resources challenge and are empowered not just to find and hire the right people, but to engage, motivate, and reward them every step of the way. Learn more about Kronos HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them at kronos.com/HR swagger. That's kronos.com/HR swagger. Kronos, workforce innovation that works. If there's something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals, BetterHelp Online Counseling can help. BetterHelp offers licensed professional counselors who are specialized in issues such as depression, anxiety, relationships, trauma, anger, family conflicts, LGBT matters, grief, self-esteem, and more. Connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment, and get help at your own time and at your own pace. Anything you share is confidential. And it's so convenient, you can schedule secure video or phone sessions, as well as chat and text with your therapist. If for some reason you're not happy with your counselor, though, you can request a new one at any time for no additional charge. Best of all, it's a truly affordable option. Kick-Ass News listeners even get 10% off your first month with the discount code KICK.
So why not get started today? Go to betterhelp.com/kick, then simply fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs and get matched with a counselor you'll love. That's betterhelp.com/kick. And now, back to the show. Now, most people know Manzanar if they know any of the camps, but you were sent all the way from Los Angeles to Arkansas and then other places. Why did they send you so far away?
It was all random.
Oh,
the
really?
Whole thing made no sense at all. Huh. I mean, it's irrational. They categorize us as enemy aliens. We weren't the enemy. In fact, right after Pearl Harbor, young Japanese Americans, like many young Americans, rushed to their recruitment centers to volunteer to serve in the United States military. This was an act of patriotism, and they responded with a slap on the face. They categorized them as enemy alien. Absolutely crazy. I mean, they were patriots, volunteering to possibly die for this country, and to call them the enemy made no sense at all, and equally senseless was to call us aliens. We were born
here.
You were
American citizens.
Right.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because in the show it does get into that, how young men, even after they had been put through all this and been degraded like this, wanted to go and volunteer and prove their patriotism and go to war and die for this country.
Well, again, the other craziness, the irrationality, they took everything from us, and then they imprisoned us for a year, and then the government realizes there's a wartime manpower shortage, and here are all these young people that they could have had that they categorized as enemy alien. How to draft people out of barbed wire concentration camps? Their solution was absolutely cruel as well as irrational. A loyalty questionnaire demanding loyalty after they've punished you time and time, relentless series of outrages. And the loyalty questionnaire was put together by people that were literally ignorant and didn't know the English language. The key question that outraged people in all 10 camps was question 28, one sentence with two conflicting ideas. It asked, will you swear your loyalty to the United States of America and forswear your loyalty to the Emperor of Japan? We're Americans. They presumed that we had an inborn genetic racial loyalty to the emperor. So if you answered no, meaning I don't have a loyalty to the Emperor of Japan, and I'm then that no applied to the first part of the very same sentence.
You can't forswear it then if you never had it.
You can't win.
If
you said, yes, I do swear my loyalty to the United States, then that yes applied to the second part meant you were confessing that you had been loyal to the emperor and now were prepared to forswear it.
Yeah.
It was
no win.
A no-win question.
Wow. And didn't your parents actually renounce their citizenship in order to protect the family?
Well,
I think almost got deported.
Well, they answered no to that outrageous question.
Right.
And for that, they were categorized as disloyal. Mm-hmm. And we had to be transferred from the Arkansas camp to a... They called it a segregation camp for disloyals in Northern California by the Oregon border, a camp called Tule Lake, which became notorious. Many of the young men, some of who had actually volunteered to serve right after Pearl Harbor, became radicalized by all this stupid goading by the government. And they became fanatically pro-Japan.
Really? So you weren't enemies before, but then they made them enemies.
Made them. The government made them, and they said, "You're going to consider us enemies. By God, we'll show you what kind of enemy we can be." And I remember waking up in the mornings, listening to these radicals exercise, jogging around the block. Preparing themselves physically to rise up when Japan landed on continental United States. that cadence was a Japanese cadence. Washoi, washoi, washoi. And I heard that in the morning as they jogged. And then when they finished their jog, they would all gather around and shout, Banzai! Banzai! They were really radicalized.
I'll bet that spooked the guards.
Oh, my goodness. The jeeps came roaring in, yeah. But the guys would scatter back into the barracks. But then the camp command tried to find the leaders of this radical group, and they would stage midnight raids. They would raid the barracks and drag out young men. More often than not, they made mistakes. They took the wrong people. And so, you know, the segregation camp became turbulent with all this radical activity. And the Congress got sick and tired of that. And they said, all right, you want to be Japanese? All right, we will let you be Japanese. And they passed the Denaturalization Act, which made it possible for American citizens to renounce their citizenship during wartime in a barbed wire prison camp, a concentration camp. It was the most unconstitutional act, but and these radicals renounced their citizenship. But most of the people in camp was those just outraged by the loyalty questionnaire. And so they did not renounce. But because only a few people renounced, Congress decided, all right, we'll show you. We're going to close down Tule Lake. We're going to let you all out. This in 1944, when the war was still going on.
Yeah, and a lot of people were not very open-minded and probably really angry and maybe even violent.
And there were rednecks that were taking pot shots at white people coming, driving out to the internment camps to visit us. Wow. And so the irony was the barbed wire fence that confined us also became the barbed wire fence that protected us from these wild rednecks with rifles. We were terrorized. My parents, you know, they had three children, and we're going to be let out into a country full of hate. And you know, as we had radicals in the camp, we had white radicals, the white supremacists, with their rifles, taking pot shots at white people that sympathized with us. What's going to happen to us? It was a horrifying situation. And my mother, in order to protect the family, to keep Tule Lake operating as a camp, which would have protected us, ironically, as well. And so the government goaded my mother into renouncing her American citizenship, which kept the camp operating. But when the war ended, my mother's name was on a list of the first ship that was carrying the deportees to Japan. My mother was born in Sacramento.
Right.
She was going to be deported to Sacramento because that's where she came from. No, they were sending her to a war-torn country, devastated. People there in Japan are hungry and rummaging around in the ruins, and we were going to be sent there. I mean, we were going to be going as a family. If my mother went, the rest of us would have gone with her.
Wow.
I owe who I am today to this incredible man, Wayne Collins, an ACLU attorney. No attorney would touch a case like this. Renunciants, American citizens who renounced their citizenship in a barbed wire concentration camp and defend people like my mother. He did. And because of his power and his passionate belief in the United States Constitution, he was able to get a mitigation rule for my mother and others who you know, had renounced, but
what an ordeal.
And her name was taken off that list, and we were able to stay in the United States. And Wayne Collins eventually restored my mother's citizenship.
Wow,
it
what
was a harrowing experience.
Yeah. I mean, with Trump's Muslim ban, the family separations, and of course the latest offense, Trump telling U.S. congresswomen to go back to where they came from, even though I think three of them were born here in the U.S.
Exactly.
Does it feel to you a little bit like history is repeating itself?
This endless cycle of governmental cruelty, I mean, you know, every so many decades, mm-hmm. in this case, seven decades, it's being repeated again, but this time, a new low. We children were intact with our parents. We were a family. But what's happening on the southern border today is children and infants are being torn away from their parents. I mean, how cruel can they be?
Yeah.
And then to really underscore the evil in these acts, some of the children are being scattered to the outlying areas of the United States. The New York Times had a front page story of this 4-week-old infant who was torn away from his father and sent to Minnesota. And a compassionate couple took them in. But when the courts ordered that the administration to put the children back together with their parents, they are so incompetent that they can't locate the parents or the children. It's a horrific low, a grotesque low that we've gone to.
Yeah. Now, I guess you probably would have met Trump because you did, Celebrity Apprentice a few years back? What were your initial impressions of him before all of this happened?
Well, I did it because I thought it'd be kind of fun.
Yeah.
But at that time, I was campaigning for marriage equality here in the United States.
Okay. So it was a platform.
And New York State did not have marriage equality.
Mm-hmm.
So at a press conference to promote the show, near the end of that press conference, I said, Mr. Trump, I'd like to invite you to have lunch with me. I will host to discuss marriage equality, because I wanted to put him on record in front of all the gathered press, his position on marriage equality. And I suspected that he would demur, saying, oh, I'm busy, I can't, I don't have the time.
Yeah.
But he surprised me. He said, you know, George, that can be an interesting discussion. Okay, we're on. Have your people get together with my people. And that conversation went on for about 4 months. But we finally got together.
Oh, you did?
Yes,
we did. Oh, that
surprises
me.
We met at Trump Grill in Trump Tower. And I said to him, Mr. Trump, you're a businessman. If New York State had marriage equality, you would profit from it. People would love
it. It's a good argument to make.
Yes, get married in New York. Gays and lesbians from all over the country and all over the United New York State would come to New York City.
That's a lot of hotel and catering business there.
Stay in your hotel, eat in your restaurants, get married in your banquet rooms. You would have a land office business because you own all these hotels and restaurants.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, I would, but I believe in traditional marriage. I had to bite my tongue.
Yeah.
Traditional marriage.
Three of them.
He was on his third marriage, and he was famously unfaithful through all three of them. And he's talking about traditional marriage.
Yeah.
I said, you know, Mr. Trump, I believe in traditional marriage, too. Traditional marriage is where two people who love each other deeply, and commit to each other faithfully for life through thickness, through thick and thin, in sickness or in health. And we want that kind of security. If something should happen to my spouse, I would like to visit him in the hospital.
Sure.
And you can't unless you're married. We want that kind of security. We believe in traditional marriage. He said, well, I believe in my traditional marriage, man and a woman. And we went back and forth, and we finally agreed to disagree.
That was it, huh? Yeah, I mean, I feel for you, because, I mean, one way or another, you've been getting discriminated against your whole life. What was it like to be on the set of The Terror? Did you get a sense of deja vu? Was it emotional at times for you?
They did an amazing job of recreating the actual reality of the internment camps. I mean, I experienced it as an innocent child, but the barracks are exactly the way I remembered it.
Wow.
To the crawl space between the barrack and the ground. We had adopted a stray dog, Blackie, and whenever he got reprimanded for having done something wrong, he would scurry under the crawl space. I remember the mess hall. It was exactly as I remembered it, except for the plates that they had. They were all brand new, absolutely pristine. The plates that we had were chipped and some were cracked and leaked.
Oh, wow.
You know, the sauce leaked through the cracks.
Yeah.
So we corrected that.
Wow.
The cooks had this neat sanitary white cap on, like all restaurant workers have. That's not the way I remember the cooks in the mess hall.
Yeah.
They had these bandanas to catch the perspiration from the heat in the kitchen, and they had undershirts on, you know. That was the reality.
Yeah, not a pretty picture.
Not looking like restaurant cooks.
Yeah.
So some of the details we had to make authentic, but that was my job, being there on the set.
Yeah, and there's a scene in The Terror where the residents of the camp are watching a silent movie, and there's a Japanese-American man narrating the movie and doing all the voices and the sound effects. I understand that was actually from your own memory as a kid, and it was at least part of what inspired you to become an actor, right?
Exactly. They showed all kinds of films, old Hollywood movies. I remember seeing Hunchback of Notre Dame. And
It was a Wallace Beery?
Was with Charles Laughton.
Oh, Charles Laughton, that's what I'm thinking of, yeah.
And, that was the way I found escape from the barbed wire fences. I was in old Paris, Notre Dame, and the bells ringing. That was there, but sometimes they had old Japanese samurai movies, and somehow the voice track was lost, and so the narrator with his assistant, with all the sound effects like coconut shells to make the sound of horses clopping and cymbals.
Wow, a whole Foley team there.
The whole,
all in one.
Two people, man and a young man.
That's crazy.
And the older man did all the voices. The voice of the shogun, and the samurai would say, "Ha, kashikomarimashita." And the princess would say,
You're pretty good at this.
And he did all the many voices. One man.
Oh, wow.
I thought he was magical. And I said to my father, "That man is an artist." He said, "Yes, they're considered artists in Japan.
Oh, man.
They're called benshi." And that memory still lingered with me. And I shared that with Alex Wu, and there it was in the script.
Wow, that's incredible. Well, it's been so much fun talking with you, George. Just real quick, as we wrap up here, I just have to ask, be straight with me, or maybe that's a bad choice of words. Be honest with me, George. I know that you just got back from Comic-Con, and you do a lot of Star Trek fan events all throughout the year. What's the most annoying thing about Trekkies?
Trekkies?
Yes.
I love Trekkies because they're the ones that made it possible for me to be talking with you like this.
Right, right.
They amplified my voice, and I'm an activist, and I would be doing the same thing, but not with access to your mic or to being in a film like The Terror, Infamy, retelling my story.
Yeah.
Star Trek gave me that opportunity to communicate with more people on this level that I never would have had.
Yeah.
So
well,
I'm
God.
Grateful to all the Star Trek fans who have helped us live long and prosper.
Well, once more, The Terror Infamy premieres August 12th on AMC, and also check out George's graphic novel, They Called Us Enemy. George Takei, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much.
Thanks again to George Takei for joining me on the show. The season premiere of The Terror Infamy airs tonight, Monday, August 12th at 9, 8 Central on AMC. Visit amc.com for more information. Also, order George Takei's wonderful new graphic novel, They Called Us Enemy, on Amazon or wherever books are sold. And he's a great follow on Twitter at George Takei. Whatever struggles you're facing, from depression and anxiety to trauma and grief, BetterHelp can connect you with a professional counselor in a safe and private online environment. It's so convenient, you can schedule secure video and phone sessions, as well as chat and text with your therapist. And anything you share is completely confidential. Best of all, it's a truly affordable option. Our listeners even get 10% off your first month with the discount code KICK. So why not get started? Simply go to betterhelp.com/kick and fill out a questionnaire to get matched with a counselor you'll love today. Be sure to subscribe to Kick-Ass News on Apple Podcasts if you haven't already. And if you like what you're hearing, then rate and review us while you're there. 5-star reviews are the easiest way for new listeners to find us. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at KickAssNewsPod. And feel free to email me with your thoughts, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. Until next time, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News.